Now, brethren and sisters, the fourth session of today, we look forward to Brother Alan Clark leading us in the study entitled The Measuring Line.
Well, brethren and sisters, perhaps a word about the charts that we have with us this weekend, or this for these couple of days. They were originally prepared in connection with a day of study that we did a few years ago on the visions of Zechariah, and were prepared by Brother Colin Spur, who fell asleep soon after he prepared them. He has a good understanding of the scriptures and has portrayed very well, I believe, the visions that we have in the prophecy of Zechariah. And now we come then to the vision of chapter 2. We remember that Zechariah is still there in the same night, seeing another aspect that is brought to him. And in verse 1 of chapter 2 we read, I lifted up mine eyes again. So you see something fresh. Here is an introduction to another vision that he has in the same night. And he looked, and behold, a man with a measuring line in his hand. And the message of this vision is that the punishment, the judgments of Jerusalem that were to be brought upon her was measured. God had these things in his control. There is a measuring line over Jerusalem, as well as the literal Jerusalem and the measuring lines that were clearly and surely were being used at that time. Again, the vision relates to the work that Zechariah was involved in. Measuring lines being used to build the temple that they were working on. As well as that literal measuring line, there was a measuring line relating to the difficulties, the trials of the city of Jerusalem. And there was a set time. It was measured beforehand for her glory. So we have the great encouragement given to the prophet Zechariah, and through Zechariah to the people working at that time. This city of Jerusalem was going to be built. It was going to be inhabited. It was going to be filled with glory. And so they were given great encouragement in the work that they had to do. The measuring line is used in interesting circumstances. The word translated line is the word hebel, and occurs in Joshua chapter 2 and verse 15. There it's in relation to Rahab the harlot. There the spies of Israel have gone into the city of Jericho to spy out the land, to find out whether they were afraid of the children of Israel, what sort of fortifications they had. And in Joshua chapter 2 and verse 15, then she let them down by a cord through the window, for her house was upon the town wall, and she dwelt upon the wall. And that word cord is the same as the word line in Zechariah chapter 2. Another one that is interesting in relation to the ultimate destiny of the people of God is in the 17th chapter of Joshua, where the inheritance is being divided by Joshua, being divided by Lot. And then in verse 5 of the 17th chapter it says, and there fell 10 portions to Manasseh beside the land of Gilead and Bashan, which were on the other side of Jordan. And that word portions is the same as the word line in Zechariah chapter 2. So we can see that the measuring had to do also not with, just with the measuring of the judgments, but the administering or the distribution of portions of inheritance. And so in Jerusalem there were going to be measures of inheritance, and in the land there was to be a measuring out of the land for the inheritance of the people of God. In the prophecy of Jeremiah we have a parallel description, I believe, to the situation in Zechariah chapter 2. There, in that 31st chapter, there's so much in Jeremiah chapter 31 that you tend to forget the bit that's right at the end of the chapter. This, in the 31st chapter of Jeremiah, we have the new covenant, which we tend to concentrate upon. Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 39 says, "And the measuring line shall yet go forth over against it upon the hill Gareb, and shall encompass about the Goath and the whole valley of the dead bodies and of the ashes and of the fields, unto the brook of Kidron, unto the corner of the horse gate toward the east, shall be holy unto Yahweh. It shall not be plucked up nor thrown down any more forever." So there was to be a measuring line. Here is a prophecy of an actual measuring line going over the areas of Jerusalem. But Zechariah is looking at the situation in relation to his work of building the temple that he was involved with. And so verse 2 goes on to say in Zechariah chapter 2, "Then said I, Whither goest thou? And he said unto me, To measure Jerusalem, to see what is the breadth thereof, and what is the length thereof." And so Jerusalem was to be measured, the length and the breadth. What is the length, is the breadth thereof, and what is the length thereof? The word translated what is ma. The part of mana. What is it? This blessing that God brought upon the children of Israel in the wilderness. What is it? Mana. And here it is, that same question is used. What? What is the, what the breadth thereof, and what the length thereof? And here we are introduced to the blessing of the city of Jerusalem as it will be. The word translated breadth is quite interesting too. It's the word Rahab. It's the same, the name of the woman that we've just been reading about in Joshua chapter 2. Sorry, yes, in Joshua chapter 2. We have then a link in between verses 1 and 2 and that incident. The length and breadth has some interesting connections through the history of through the scriptures. Several things are measured. We have here, they want to know the measure of Jerusalem. But in Genesis chapter 6, we are told of the length and breadth of the ark through which the children of Israel were delivered. And particularly in relation to the ultimate destiny of the land of Israel, if we turn to Genesis chapter 13, we find that that length and breadth, or breadth and length, are used again in relation to the promises made to Abraham. Genesis chapter 13 and verse 17. "Arise, walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee." You just imagine that, brothers and sisters. Abraham told, walk through the length and the breadth, I will give it unto thee. And here Zechariah sees a measuring line to measure the length and the breadth of Jerusalem, which was to be given to the saints, joined in the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ. In Isaiah chapter 8, we have another occurrence there, that this land belongs not to the people that possess it at the present time. It is God that decides who this land goes to. Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 8 says, and he shall pass through Judah, he shall overflow and go over, he shall reach even to the neck, this is the Assyrian coming down on the land, and the stretching out of his wings shall fill the breadth of thy land, O Emmanuel. And so the land belongs to Emmanuel. And we know the meaning of that name, Emmanuel. It means with us, El, or God with us. It speaks of that one who was born of flesh, and yet because he was the Son of God, so manifested the character of God that he was called God with us. And we really ought not to study these visions in Zechariah without understanding that here we have visions relating to the manifestation of the ones who have developed the likeness to the God of heaven. The development of the glory. We beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. The character of the Father was manifested in him. And if he's there as our example and we should follow, then we too should, at least to an extent, be manifestations of God. This is the greatness of the calling to which we are called, brothers and sisters. And the things that are being described here are our inheritance. Let us then rejoice in these things that we see. We are called to rejoice and to take part in the glory of this Jerusalem that is going to be glorified. And so back in Zechariah chapter 2, we read in verse 3, and behold, the angel that talked with me went forth, and another angel went out to meet him, and said unto him, run, speak to this young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls, for the multitude of men and cattle therein. You'll remember that one of the problems that they had with the exiles returning to Jerusalem was that there weren't enough of them. Not to make the area productive, not to defend the city, not to do everything that was needed in the establishment of this renewed kingdom of Judah. And so we have this glorious prophecy then to say that Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls for the multitude of men and cattle therein. So there are going to be multitudes in that land. Just as Zechariah, this young man, had explained to him the vision, so Daniel in chapter 8 has the vision explained to him. Jerusalem then was going to be inhabited. And in the 8th chapter of Zechariah, we get further information regarding the inhabiting of Jerusalem. A glorious picture of the age to come. Chapter 8 and verse 3. Thus saith Yahweh, I am returned unto Zion, and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. So Yahweh is going to dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, in his Son, and those that are in him. This is a manifestation of the Father. The Yahweh is going to dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, in the person of his Son, and in the persons of those that are in him. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain. One is amazed at the grandeur of these things to which we are called. The mountain of Yahweh of hosts is to be the holy mountain. Not just holy to Jews. It's not the sort of holy place that we have in the world as it stands at the present time. Our Christian holy places and Muslim holy places and Jewish holy places. This is going to be the mountain of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain, that mountain to which all nations are going to come to learn of the God of Israel. This holy mountain is going to be counted as holy throughout the whole world. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff on his hand for very age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, if it be marvellous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvellous in mine eyes, saith Yahweh of hosts. And so in Jerusalem. And by Jerusalem the prophet clearly includes the whole of the holy oblation. We don't believe that this is talking about the temple, but about the city to which the people will come, who will stay when they go up to Jerusalem, a place called Yahweh Shammah. Not Yahweh is there, but Yahweh thither. It's the city called Yahweh Shammah. It's the place from which they will go to visit the temple in the age to come. The glorious things that are going to be done in the restoration of the people of Israel and the development of things not yet seen in the earth, brethren and sisters, is indicated in the marvellous things that are going to be done. It's the same word as is used by Micah. According to the days of thy coming out of the land of Egypt, will I show unto them marvellous things. It's that hard thing that God can do that man seems to think that it is impossible. It's first used in Genesis chapter 18. When Sarah laughs, when she hears that she's to have a child. Is anything too hard for Yahweh? The angel says. Too hard is the same as marvellous in this verse here. So we see something of the marvels that are to be brought to pass in the earth. Verse 7 goes on to say, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country, and I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. They shall be my people, and I will be their God. Reflects the new covenant that is to be made with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. That is part of the new covenant. They shall be my people, and I will be their God. It's part of the covenant that God made with Abraham. And not only will they be his people, and he their God, but it will be in truth and righteousness. We marvel at the purity and the greatness of the inheritance that is set before us in these scriptures. It's going to be, because of the multitude of men and women, of men and cattle therein, as towns without walls. Now mine goes to Ezekiel chapter 38, where it speaks of when the invader comes down upon the land, it'll be a land of unwalled villages. In the 36th chapter of the prophecy of Ezekiel, we have a further reference to that same development. The land is going to be filled with people, and Yahweh is going to bless his people and bring them back into the land. Verse 11 of Ezekiel chapter 36 says, "And I will multiply upon you man and beast, and they shall increase and bring fruit, and I will settle you after your old estates, and will do better unto you than at your beginnings. And ye shall know that I am Yahweh." So Jerusalem is going to have a multitude of inhabitants. And verse 5 of Zechariah chapter 2 goes on to say, "For I, saith Yahweh, will be unto her a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her." And so we develop this theme of glory. The development of the manifestation of the Father in Christ and the saints. They will dwell in the midst of her. So Yahweh is going to be a wall of fire round about. He's going to be a protection for the children of Israel. Not like when the invader comes down into the land in Ezekiel 38, when the land is without or they're in unwalled villages, having neither bars nor gates, no form of defence. Now, when the city is blessed and is glorified, Yahweh will be unto her a wall of fire round about. But we perhaps get something of the idea in Exodus chapter 14, when the children of Israel came out of the land of Egypt. I suppose it's really there in the protection that they had from the Egyptians when the pillar of fire went behind their camp and was darkness to the Egyptians and light to the children of Israel. But it's also there in chapter 14 and verse 22. "And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left." Those waters were a wall. Whoever saw a wall made of water? But it was so according to the record here. Yahweh is able to make walls of whatever element he chooses. On this occasion, it was a wall of water through which they were able to walk on dry land to escape from the Egyptians. And in Zechariah, we have the prophecy that he will be a wall of fire round about. Now that wall round about Jerusalem is there in symbol in the book of Revelation chapter 21. The 21st chapter of the book of Revelation is a symbolic reference to the city of Jerusalem. And the city is made up of people, of spiritual stones. And verse 12 says that the city had a wall great and high, and had 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and names written thereon, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. And in verse 14, "And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And then in verse 18 we read, and the building of the wall of it was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, like unto clear glass. So the wall was of jasper. And our thoughts go to the fourth chapter, where the one sitting upon the throne is said to be of a jasper and a sardine stone. Now, the sardine stone is associated with the flesh. The Hebrew name is Adam, very closely related to the word Adam. But the jasper is related to the spirit, the state of immortality, the divine nature. And so this wall is of jasper. The saints are a defence to the people of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. They are a wall of spirit. And verse 11 of Revelation chapter 21 says that the city had the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. We're talking of symbolic things here, brothers and sisters, but the concepts that are there, the immortality of the saints, the purity of the doctrine that comes from that city, the safety of the people that dwell there, the righteousness that is developed in them, all are involved in the symbols that we've been looking at. And so we come back to Zechariah chapter 2. In verse 6 we read, "Ho, ho, come forth and flee from the land of the north, saith Yahweh, for I have spread you abroad as the four winds of the heaven, saith Yahweh." And so they were going to be called from the land of the north. The prophets have several calls of this type, or they speak of the greatness of the deliverance of their deliverance at this time. Jeremiah chapter 23 is a well known one, where the children of Israel are delivered from all nations whither they've been scattered. Jeremiah chapter 23 and at verse 7 says, "Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that they shall no more say, Yahweh liveth that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but Yahweh liveth which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country, and from all countries whither I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land." And that occurs several times in the words of the prophets. This deliverance is going to be the greatest deliverance the people of Israel have ever known. We are looking at superlatives here, brothers and sisters. This is a glorious kingdom that's going to be established. And Jerusalem is indeed going to be glorious. Indeed, in Matthew chapter 24, we read of the calling, the angels going forth to bring the children of Israel back to the land. Jeremiah chapter 24 and verse 31 says, "He shall send his angels." And the angels in this place will be the saints. The saints will go with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect, the people of Israel, from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. And they are going to be brought back. So Yahweh is going to deliver the people of Israel from the land of the north and from the four winds to which they have been scattered. And they're going to be brought back into the land. So verse 7 of Zechariah chapter 2 speaks of the call that will come to them. "Deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon." the prophet Isaiah has a similar call. Isaiah chapter 52 of Isaiah and verse 2. Shake thyself from the dust. And notice that again the context. These prophecies are full, brothers and sisters, of great comfort to those that will only put their time into the reading of them and the contemplation of them. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion. What a glorious opening to the chapter. And then verse 2 goes on to say, shake thyself from the dust. Arise and sit down, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. And then part of the gospel message of the age to come, having told the nations to fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, the call comes to Israel, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins. And so the children of Israel are told to deliver themselves from Babylon, this system of iniquity that now pervades the whole earth, brothers and sisters. They're going to be delivered from Europe in particular, and from all the areas of the earth to which they've been scattered. They're going to deliver themselves to some extent, because those that will not let them go back, they will fight their way back and will bring judgments in that deliverance upon the nations that are trying to stop them from going back. And so we go on in the prophecy to verse 8. For thus saith Yahweh of hosts, after the glory hath he sent me unto the nations which spoil you. For he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. John Carter, in his book The Prophets After the Exile, has this to say regarding the apple of his eye. God is as sensitive to the treatment the nations serve to his people as the eye is sensitive to touch. And if you think of that, brothers and sisters, the nations have got a lot to answer for. After the glory is established in Jerusalem. After the glory hath he sent me unto the nations which spoil you. And so the nations are going to be judged for their treatment of his people. Not only natural Israel, but spiritual Israel too. Psalm 149, well-known words concerning the work of this time. The work that is a pleasure to the saints in that it brings judgments to those who deserve it, and it is part of the necessary work of taking the wickedness from the earth, so that the kingdom of peace and righteousness may prevail. Verse 5 of Psalm 149. Let the saints be joyful in glory. Let them sing aloud upon their beds. Let the high praises of God be in their mouth, and a two-edged sword in their hand, to execute vengeance upon the heathen or the nations, and punishment upon the people, to bind their kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of iron, to execute upon them the judgment written. This honour, and it is an honour, brothers and sisters, to be able to take part in this great work of the establishment of the kingdom, and part of that work is the bringing of judgments upon the nations. This honour have all his saints. Hallelujah! Praise be to Yahweh. In Isaiah chapter 63 we have another reference to this deliverance and the work of vengeance brought upon the nations. Isaiah chapter 63 talks about the one coming from Basra. We've already referred to it once. And then in verse 9 we read of his attitude to the children of Israel. In all their affliction, he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity, he redeemed them, and he bare them, and carried them all the days of old. So in their affliction, he was afflicted. Even when it was he that brought the affliction because of their iniquity, in their affliction he was afflicted. And if through the centuries he has been afflicted by the affliction brought upon them by the nations, just consider the righteousness of the judgments that he's going to bring upon the nations. And yet the object of bringing the judgments on the nations is brought out here. In his love and his pity, he redeemed them, and he bare them and carried them all the days of old. It's part of the process of the redemption of his people of Israel, bringing them back to the land. Back then to Zechariah chapter 2. Verse 9. For behold, I will shake mine hand upon them, and they shall be a spoil to their servants. And ye shall know that Yahweh of hosts hath sent me. So Yahweh is going to shake his hand upon them. It's not quite like shaking the fist. It's a more gentle thing, yet still an active thing that is involved. In Exodus chapter 20, we have that same word used so that we get some idea of what is involved in shaking his hand over the nations and bringing his judgments upon them. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 25. And if thou wilt make me an altar of stone, thou shalt not build it of hewn stone, for if thou lift up thy tool upon it, thou hast polluted it. So the lifting up of a tool is the same as the shaking of his hand in Zechariah chapter 2. And another delightful reference in relation to the law is in the 29th chapter of Exodus and at verse 24. He says, and thou shalt put all in the hands of Aaron and in the hands of his sons, and shalt wave them for a wave offering before Yahweh, a lifting up of the sacrifice. And that word wave is the same as the shaking of his hand. So he's going to lift up his hand upon the nations and bring the judgments upon them, and they shall be a spoil to their servants. The children of Israel have been their servants through the ages, but they're going to be a spoil. The nations are going to be a spoil to the children of Israel. We could look at several prophecies talking about the way that the riches of the Gentiles are going to be brought to the children of Israel. But we'll probably be familiar with these. So let's continue on into verse 10. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith Yahweh. Here then is a cause of rejoicing, for Yahweh is going to dwell in the midst of them. There was a time when Yahweh dwelling in the midst of Israel was not a pleasant thing for them. There was a time when Yahweh removed himself from the camp lest he should destroy them because of their iniquity, because they would not follow his ways. as they wandered through the wilderness and were rebellious. But now is going to be a time of rejoicing, because they will want Yahweh to dwell in the midst of them. And the prophet Zephaniah talks about this time of the dwelling in the midst of the land. Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 14. See the rejoicing involved here. Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel, be glad and rejoice with all the heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. Verse 15, Yahweh hath taken away thy judgments, he hath cast out thine enemy, the king of Israel, even Yahweh, is in the midst of thee, and thou shalt not see evil any more. What greater things could be done for the nation than this? They shall not see evil any more. In that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, fear thou not, and to Zion, let not thine hands be slack. Yahweh thy God in the midst of thee is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with singing. What a wonderful contemplation this is then, brothers and sisters. This prospect laid before Zechariah in the midst of all his trouble, the opposition to the building. And here is the comfort given to him of the glory that the city of Jerusalem will yet attain to. Verse 11 of Zechariah 2, and many nations shall be joined to Yahweh in that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, and thou shalt know that Yahweh of hosts hath sent me unto thee. We have that well-known verse at the end of the 8th chapter of Zechariah that talks, that says, thus saith Yahweh of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. And so many nations are going to be joined unto Yahweh. They're going to be brought into the covenant. Israel is going to be given the preeminence, but the nations of the earth are going to be brought into the covenant to be joined to Yahweh. And the city of Jerusalem and the land of Israel is going to be at the centre of the worship and administration of that kingdom. Verse 12 of Zechariah 2, and Yahweh shall inherit Judah his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. That then was the centre of his presence in the land, the portion of Judah. Yahweh shall inherit Judah, his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. Ezekiel chapter 48. There is to be a holy oblation that will take up roughly the area of the portion allotted to Judah in days gone by. Ezekiel chapter 48. And verse 8, and by the border of Judah, from the east side unto the west side, shall be the offering which ye shall offer of 25,000 reeds in breadth, and in length as one of the other parts from the east side unto the west side, and the sanctuary shall be in the midst of them. The oblation that ye shall offer unto Yahweh shall be of 25,000 in length, and of 10,000 in breadth. And for them, even for the priests, shall be this holy oblation toward the north, 25,000 in length, and toward the west, 10,000 in breadth, and toward the east, 10,000 in breadth, and toward the south, 25,000 in length. And the sanctuary of Yahweh shall be in the midst thereof. So we have two portions of 10,000 each, and there is another portion of 5,000 in which is this city, Yahweh Shammah, It's all part of this oblation. Yahweh is to have an inheritance in the land that he gave to his people. He is going to accept this inheritance as an offering from them. What a blessing it's going to be that they will be allowed to give to him his inheritance, his portion in the Holy Land. And he will choose Jerusalem again. As we contemplate these things, brothers and sisters, we marvel at the greatness of the hope that is given to us. And verse 13 goes on to say, "Be silent, O all flesh, before Yahweh, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation." And so all nations, all flesh, is going to be silent before Yahweh. No one can open his mouth before the purity, the righteousness, the power of this manifestation of glory. There are several quotations that we could look at. Perhaps we could look at one or two. Isaiah chapter 26. And verse 20. Here we have the situation of the saints at the time of the judgment. "Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, Yahweh cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood, and shall no more cover her slain." So there is a time when the saints have to enter into the chambers, and then they will go forth to bring the judgment upon the nations. And in Psalm 68, that glorious psalm that talks about the restoration of the land and the inheritance of the saints, in Psalm 68 and verse 5, "A father of the fatherless and a judge of the widows." Thank you. We marvel again at the attributes that the Father takes to himself when he talks about his position. He's not only the great God that created the heavens and the earth, the great power that that is able to turn nations upside down. He is a father of the fatherless and a judge of the widows. Is God in his holy habitation. And verse 17, "The chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of angels, the Lord among them." Sinai, into the holy, as the better rendering. The idea is of motion from Sinai into the holy, into Jerusalem. The movement of the saints from the area of the judgment into the city of Jerusalem. Then in Isaiah chapter 42, we have another link in this glorious picture that is placed before us. Isaiah chapter 42, and verse 12, "Let them give glory unto Yahweh and declare his praise in the islands. Yahweh shall go forth as a mighty man. He shall stir up jealousy like a man of war. He shall cry, yea, roar. He shall prevail against his enemies. I have long time holden my peace. I have been still and refrained myself. Now will I cry like a travailing woman. I will destroy and devour at once. I will make waste mountains and hills and dry up all their herbs. And I will make the rivers islands and will dry up the pools. Yahweh is going to act through his Son and the saints to establish the kingdom. The judgments are going to be brought upon the nations. But when those judgments are over, we have the situation described in Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 20. But Yahweh is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. A glorious climax to this vision, this one of the visions that Zechariah saw at night, when his senses were attuned to the things that were being shown to him. What encouragement he would have received as he saw the prospect of the glory of Jerusalem, the habitation of Yahweh, the centre of the worship of the whole earth, the manifestation of his glory that will never be diminished. Let us then rejoice in this hope too, because we can be encouraged just as Zechariah was. We can share in his experience as he continues through the night to receive visions from God.